webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 18th of August 2016, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, bustling metropolis that hardly any of you have heard of. Thanks to the generosity of Gospel Revolutionaries Jimmy and Carrie McCollum, and where we say that picking our favourite religion is a little bit like picking our favourite cancer. But right now from Palm Beach Gardens, did you get that? From Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, bringing you more gospel CPR is the Heretic's Hope, the Preacher's Paradox, and the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Mr. Michael Williams. Hello, Mr. Michael Williams. How are you?
Hello, Barris. Yes, just ask Alexa if there is a Palm Beach port, and she will have no information for you.
Alexa, is there such a place as Palm Beach?
He didn't add Florida to it.
Alexa, is there such a place as Palm Beach, Florida?
Sorry, I didn't understand the question I heard.
Oh, that's
I tell you what, just ask her for the location of Palm Beach, Florida.
Alexa, where is Palm Beach, Florida?
Palm Beach is a village in Palm Beach County, Florida. It is 363 miles, 584 kilometers, southeast of Tallahassee and in the east part of West Palm Beach.
That was, Alexa, that was more than I wanted to know.
So it's a village.
It's a village. It takes a village. I didn't know that you were such a Clinton supporter, mate, but it takes a village. Hey, today.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Good morning.
Yes, you and Alexa just left on another PowerCast altogether. I was just listening.
Well,
wanted to see what she had to say about the gospel.
We've got important things to do, you know. Oh, try this.
Oh no,
Alexa. What is the definition of redemptionism?
I can't find the answer to the question I heard.
Oh, you stupid boy.
Well, I guess we have to give people the answer to that, right? Since Alexa doesn't know.
You got to do it right now. What is redemptionism, Michael?
Redemptionism is the firm conclusion that the entire world was redeemed at the cross. No one left out. Not waiting for a future, no eventual redemption, nothing eventual about it. But
steal that off Gloria? You know, nothing broken, nothing left out.
Gloria, who and what?
Oh man, really? You talk about the Copelands like you know them, but I've heard them preach, mate. They're right up there with the best. You know, Benny Hinn.
They are indeed.
Pat Robertson. Hey, listen, mate. So this morning I was sitting out on my porch. I took my coffee out to the front porch and I was looking at the hummingbirds just lost in the beauty of nature. And then it suddenly struck me that today was an important day for somebody else.
What, the 18th of August?
I believe so. Are you going to say it or will I?
Well, the 18th of August means nothing to me.
When's your birthday?
It's the 16th of August.
Oh, crikey dick. Okay. So I was sitting out on my porch watching the hummingbirds and listening to the people drive along the front of my little redneck property here and realized that we have missed a pretty important milestone in your life. Do you care to get me out of this mess? God.
Depending on which reality you live in, now our broadcast being the actual day of reality. Today, the day that we're recording on, after giving you such a rough time about it, is my birthday. And I officially actually turned 64. I began my 65th year on this planet today. And most people that know me know that I changed my birth date in January. So I've been saying I'm 64 ever since January the 1st. That seems, somewhere in my mind, it works to mitigate actually turning 64, because if I've been 64 for 7 months prior, then turning 64 is no big deal.
Oh, Mike, you're so full of it.
And then that way I get to stay 64 for a year and a half.
All right.
So I live, my years are a year and a half long. Now, in my mind, that works, so.
Well, in your mind, that works.
In my mind, it works. which is not something I should admit.
Now, you realize that I got there before you, don't you?
Yes. I not only realize that, I rely on that.
you actually prize that. now, as far as I understand, I'm pretty certain that this allows you entry to the Wise Grumpy Old Men Club. And so here is the Wise Grumpy Old Men song.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will you still be sending me a valentine, birthday greetings, bottle of wine? If I've been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?
You also realize, of course, that this is only going to exist for about a month. And then I am another year older than you, so that you'd be calling me, oh, I don't know, sir?
Yeah, we're both 64 right now. Just for 1 month, though, better enjoy your youth, because in 1 month it goes away, Bears.
Oh, dear. Okay. We're here for some more CPR today, mate.
CPR? What is that?
CPR is the consistent, persistent, repetitive.
Ah!
Gospel of peace.
Mm-mm. And you know, it works, Harris.
Well, it got you to 64.
It got me to 64, and it got me through about 4 days ago, too. I very rarely have days that are a little blue or anything like that, but I do have them. Far from depression, goodness gracious, the pain of depression, the darkness of depression is just not to be even compared with somebody saying I'm kind of down today. But I was having a blue day, and you had just sent me the PowerCast last Thursday.
That's the one where you schooled me in how to do stuff in context. I remember. I'll never forget that.
Oh, I love telling people what to do. So it maybe that's what lifted me up, is just hearing myself.
It's putting, yeah, well, there's a couple of ways we can get higher in this life. One is by putting other people down.
Well, I listened to last week's PowerCast. And I cannot express to the degree of how beneficial it was to me. I spent an hour and 20 minutes listening to this and our little added excerpt that you did. And some people may not have gotten that little added excerpt at the end because when you signed off, we signed off.
Lots of people just go up to that, and so family, it is that we must leave you thing.
Yeah, they just click it off at the moment.
Yeah. So if you missed out, you missed out.
Yeah, because, I mean, the entire thing was good. I don't know. I can't tell you what it is about the gospel. Maybe we could have that discussion one day as to why it does that. I was having a discussion with someone the other day, and I said, you know, I realize music can, and poetry can, but you kind of got to be in the mood for the music. You got to be in the mood for the poetry. you got to be in the mood for certain things to have that lifting effect to you. The gospel, you don't have to be in any particular mood. You just got to listen and participate and discuss.
And you can do that 24/7 with if you go to www.gospelrevolution.com and just click on audio and the 24/7 radio. You can do any time you want.
Well, exactly that. And you say, well, I just don't have an hour and 20 minutes. How about 5 minutes? Go click on Jeff's videos.
There you go. Now you're talking.
So now you're down to 5 minutes. You know, I remember
I call them nitro pills.
Exactly. I remember Keith Green, who was always such an encourager.
Oh, and, really? Turn on burn.
He wrote a song, and it said it was so melodic and beautiful, and it led up to this one point. It says, Jesus rose from the dead, and you can't even get out of bed. And
spoken like a true. Yeah, he was a son of the hippie generation, Hayton Ashbury in San Francisco. I mean, he was right at the center of that thing. And he came out of that. I mean, I don't know if he was classically trained or not. I heard him in the Sydney Town Hall, and man, that guy was some kind of pianist. But yeah, but he did drop his plane. He speared in with his kids he speared in because he overloaded his bloody plane, idiot. With I don't know half a dozen people or something.
Oh, I know it was a terrible tragedy to hear about. Such a complete loss of a man and his wife and his family. And, you know, there are dangers to thinking you can defy logic by being spiritual. And I don't know that that's what happened, but I know how these people are. I was around when people said, oh, don't worry about the logical part of this. Just believe the Lord. I've related the story several times
because that is faith.
That's faith. That's being spiritual. And we had a driver that tried to run a car off the road in a full-size motorhome down a sideways embankment, and I told them that I would never get back in the vehicle with this particular person driving. And the leaders of our group, which was with Norval Hayes, rebuked me and said, where is your trust? In Manuel, who was the driver. Is it in manual or is it in God? So there, you know, taking that, I apply to what happened to Keith Green, because I know he was of that extreme persuasion also.
I bet that's what Jim Jones told his people, you know, the people in Guyana who he fed the Kool-Aid to, the poison them all. I mean, a couple of hundred people at once. I bet he said, who's your faith in? Is it in God?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, here it is, too. You know, I was talking to Dr. Leslie Kaza yesterday, and this is what I got out of our conversation.
Does Dr. Leslie listen to our podcast?
I think he does occasionally.
I think he's
I think we create a PowerCast every time I talk to him. So
we just don't record it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Dr. Leslie, Dr. Leslie is one of our... just one of our most faithful friends, and Dr.
Really
Liz,
is. Yeah, every level.
And he didn't come out of like the Word of Faith movement. He came out of the Catholic tradition, and I've rarely met a guy who imparts peace as much as he does. He and I sat down in our room in Calgary some time back, and it was just a peace imparting experience. It was very good. Sorry, interrupted you there.
Leslie is a very established and respected cardiologist there in Edmonton, Alberta. But this is what came out of our conversation. Knowing the gospel is the power to live a temporal life to the full by having an eternal view of it.
How simple is that?
I know. So this is why I said we actually do PowerCasts. They're just not recorded. But this was the heart and meat of what I brought out of our conversation. And because Leslie's always saying, you know, he's always saying, well, let's take the 30,000 foot view of it. And you're going to take two views. If you ask Leslie a question, he's going to say, first off, let's take the 30,000 foot view. And he's going to make sure we first know that everybody's one, everybody is equal, you know, that there is a realm where there is no pain, there is nobody being moved by emotion and all of this. And then he says, now let's get down to the earth view of it. But so that's where I got this from, was the ability, the power of the gospel, and boy, it sure fit with me completely, is that, you know, when Paul said the gospel is the power of God, what is that salvation to us? And I really think, Barris, that this sums up what I feel about the power of God to save the soul. It's the ability to live a temporal life to the full by having an eternal view of it.
Well, that's
good.
Oh, that is real good. The eternal view is that which, to me at least, this is the way I say it, the eternal view is that which stabilizes my inner space.
Mm-hmm.
And once my inner space is, stabilized, my outer space is navigable with greater ease.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the gospel, Barris. I fall in love with it almost each and every time that these illuminations about it come. In just another fractal, another way, another CPR, and it never is old, it's never tired, it just never is. And I'm just very, very grateful for it. Over the last period of time, I've developed a view of this, that what the gospel does is helps me negotiate with myself differently and navigate with others in a different way. So that way, life is completely, it's always fluid. The internal is always fluid. You don't develop a rigidity in your way of thinking. The gospel does not develop a rigidity. It develops a fluidity about the way we think. And so, because the way we think is going to always evolve, or at least it should. I'm absolutely persuaded that it should evolve and pertain to each and every subject. But if I don't learn how to negotiate with myself, how do I negotiate with myself? Well, it depends on, number one, if I've got guilt inside of me. If I am in denial of my own thoughts, if I lie to myself, let me tell you, the last person in the world you ought to lie to is yourself, because you don't have anybody to negotiate with, and you just are not going to negotiate with yourself, and you're going to lie to yourself, and then the way you navigate with others will be extremely affected by that. And you will develop a world that does not exist and then imply that onto others. Now you say, Michael Williams, you sound like an authority on this. I am. I've done it so well. So I am an authority on it. I know what it is to live in self-pity. I know what it is to lie to myself. And of all the things that I could tell you the gospel has helped me with, it is to stop lying to myself. There is no guilt. There just is no guilt. It just is amazing to be able to have that. And therefore, my negotiation and how I work with others is evolving to this very day.
We are in the middle of a series. You wouldn't have known it to listen to us for the last few weeks, but we're in the middle of a series.
We are looking at things that Paul drew a comparison to. Be a good place, Barris, read down through the topics that this series covers.
Yeah. The first one was from one garden to another garden.
Garden to garden.
Garden to garden. Tree to tree.
And that's the one we're on.
And then The Temptation of Adam to The Temptation of Jesus.
Oh, I love this one.
Then From One Creation to a New Creation.
Mm.
And then Heaven and Earth to a New Heaven and Earth.
Oh, my. Boy, we have got a lot of territory to cover and a lot of good stuff. Goodness gracious. Now, like I said, these are concepts that, for the most part, were Paul's understanding of these things. You have to understand that the disciples really did not comment on these subjects. Now, they did make reference to Jesus dying on a tree. At least I think they did. It is. I'm assuming that. Bears, could you click on our term tree there and scroll through James and Peter and John and see if they mentioned this subject?
They did. James didn't. James only talked about a fig tree bearing olive berries and some other kind of inanity. But Peter, in 1 Peter 2:24, said, "Who," that is talking about Christ, "in his own self bare our sins in his body on" —
that's right —
"the tree."
On the tree, exactly. So this one is not as strictly a Pauline doctrine. It's not exclusively spoken of by Paul as these others are. But still, it's very, very worthy a comparison of the tree in the garden and the tree, as it is called in the New Testament, of the cross. Of course, the comparison, not only that we draw, but the comparison that all of Christianity draws and has drawn over the years, over these 2,000 years or so, has been this comparison between the two trees. So that's why we're going into this, is because there seems to be a very powerful understanding that is locked up here in this. We know that I said this decades ago, along with others, that the problem started on a tree and it ended on a tree. The solution came at the tree. The problem began at a tree, and the solution came on a tree. So this comparison seems to be very legitimate, and it has brought insight. Anything that can create a picture in our mind is going to help us understand the gospel.
Mm.
So what we want to do today is go down through this, and Barris, I know you have been looking at some stuff beforehand to get ready for this. This comparison between tree to tree, what do you have on it?
Well, let's see now. There are three words in the New Testament that seem to be translated as tree. It's a bit like
Yeah.
Now we got to sift and separate again. Now there is a word that seems to be for a fig tree. That word is asuke, and it seems to be just used for fig trees and nothing else. The next word for a tree that we find in the New Testament is called dendron. It's a Greek word, dendron, which simply means a tree.
Rhododendron.
Exactly. In fact, rhododendron means a rose tree, and we get that word straight out of the Greek. Exactly right.
We didn't know we were being all Greeky when we were talking about that flower, right?
Geeky, Greeky.
Yep.
That was us, mate. And then you have another tree called an olive tree, a wild olive tree, which is agrialeos. And it's just, you don't see that mentioned much in the New Testament. It's Paul uses it when he talks about the wild olive tree being grafted in Romans 11. And then we have the word zulon. Zulon simply means a piece of timber. It just means a piece of a dead tree. It could be a stick. It could be a staff. It could be, it's often used to describe the tree on which Christ died. And it just is simply a piece of a product of a tree, not a fruit of a tree so much, but a product of a tree. And in that respect, it's a fruit, I suppose.
So when we look at the verses where Jesus said a good tree brings forth good fruit, I was thinking that we could go through and make those comparisons and apply that to the work of the cross, but that doesn't really work, does it?
Where it's talking about, even so, every good tree brings forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree brings forth evil fruit. That word is dendron.
Yes. Yeah.
A living
fruit-bearing tree.
Correct.
But the term tree, what are the verses that we have about Jesus dying on a tree? Can you pull up some of those?
Absolutely. Acts 5:30 is where that concept begins, and it's the God of our fathers. I think this is not Stephen, this is Peter. Raised up Jesus, whom you slew and hanged on a zulon, on a tree.
Oh, not a dendron.
Not a dendron.
Oh, wow.
Not a living tree, but a piece of wood. Now, family, I know that you're saying, what have these guys been drinking? But hang in there. This is going to get interesting.
It would have to. We just shot down every comparison that I was going to bring to between the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and the tree that was Jesus died on. Because we've not gone back also and looked up the word tree that was in the Garden of Eden. What is the definition of that Hebrew word in the word do not partake of the tree? In fact, look and see if the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil are the same Hebrew word. Since we've got this comparison going on in the Greek, it could possibly carry over to the Hebrew.
Well, we can actually make a direct comparison because Jewish scholars who were fluent in Greek 250 years before the birth of Christ, translated the Hebrew into Greek. So we can actually do a direct comparison. But in the Hebrew, the word simply means it could be a live tree or it could be a dead tree. But we know it's a live tree because the Lord God commanded the man, saying, "Of every tree of the garden you may freely eat."
Yes.
Pretty certain that's a live tree. But of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, exactly the same word, et.
Okay, wonderful.
Yeah.
All right, so we don't have any difference in those terms. So a tree is a tree is a tree here.
Yes.
However, what has been done by this translation to the word tree, now get this, the guys who translated from Hebrew into the Greek, they put a definition here about this thing that Jesus died on, as being a zulon. It was not a dendron. The term dendron is a live, one would think, a fruit-bearing tree, life or fruit-bearing. So the one that they have translated is the word zulon, much like, this is beginning to sound a whole lot like our investigation into the term world, and finding out that there's four substantially different Greek words for the word world, and that's what really deconstructed the entire false perception about the end of the world as presented by the Gospel Revolution. And we found out that those words are different. In fact, Matthew 24, the word world shows up three times, and yet there's three different Greek words for the word world. It's just amazing. We found out that what the Greek says in context of what the writing says is so very powerful. And I remember, Barris, going back through that and reading those definitions out of the Matthew 24 and finding out that cosmos was not what the disciples asked about, and that cosmos was not what Jesus was responding to.
I'm Hey, listen. Do you want a bit of a cracker up the butt? Here it is. The word in the Septuagint in Genesis is Zulon.
Are you kidding me? Wow.
I don't even know what to.
Oh my gosh.
Don't even know what to make of it.
So.
What do we do now?
Oh my goodness. So the same guys who translated this word. All right, so you got to get this in the PowerCast without your expletive.
Why not? I can always make a beep. Mate, do you need to finish that thought you were on a moment ago?
So then the guys who translated this as the word Zulon in the New Testament also translated the tree of the knowledge of good and evil as the word Zulon.
The Greek word for something that's dead, yes.
My goodness. So is that for both the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and the tree of life?
Just checked it. Yep.
Well, you're not playing fair today.
I'm just not. I'm just not your friend today, am I? And it's your birthday and all.
It's my birthday. So, this is very interesting. Now, we are either going to find out that this term Zulon can include, in its contextual use, a live tree, a fruit-bearing tree, or is it just something made from a tree? Like the table that I'm sitting at right now, it's mostly wood. So the table I'm sitting at would be a Zulon. And then the tree that I'm looking at out my window would be a dendron.
Well, if we're going to take the New Testament Greek, Koine Greek, and check it out for consistency, that's exactly what it seems to be in the New Testament. However, the classic Greek, which was used a couple of hundred years before Christ, and we have no reason to think that it in any way differs from Koine Greek. That Koine Greek is simply the street Greek of the New Testament, the street language of the New Testament. But in the Old Testament, definitely, it's a little bit like all poodles are dogs, but not all dogs are poodles. Apparently, all trees are Zulons. But not all Zulons are trees.
Gotcha. Yes.
That is, not all Zulons are living trees.
Yeah, yeah. So, is the definition flexible then, based on context?
I think given the Septuagint, we have to accept yes.
Yeah. Especially with the way the word is used in Genesis.
Mm.
Because he's talking about not partaking of the fruit of.
It's a fruit-bearing tree. It's a live organism.
So regardless as to whether the fruit is good or bad, it is alive because it could not be something carved from a tree, but the tree itself. Well, this is just very interesting.
Now, we started off, just so you know where we're heading today. We don't know.
We don't know, yeah.
I
was looking forward to you telling me where we're going, and then you only confirmed my worst fears.
Well, now that we're both 64, I can't lead you anymore, but it's only a month.
Oh, my. So, we are looking at the tree that started this all and the tree that ended it all. I think the only way we can do this, Barris, and be intellectually honest is to look at the possibilities of both, because both are in and from the Hebrew and the Greek. Both definitions are possible, that it could be a poodle that is a dog, or it could be a dog that's not a poodle. So.
There you go. There you go. Now you're talking my kind of language. This is the sort of thing which I, a little bit of, how do I put this nicely? Let's play with our brains. That's what I'll say.
I thought you were going to say a little bit of alcohol.
Well, mate, I don't think that could hurt us today, frankly.
Hey, I'm ready for a drink myself. Oh, my goodness. So now, folks, the reason that it is my preference that we air things like this is that I want you to understand the joy of doing this type of research. This is taking place right in front of you, raw and uncensored.
It's like last week, as I said to you, Mike, I let everything go to air between me saying, no, the super text and the subtext or the super set and the subset, and you schooled me in context. And the reason I let that go to air is I want our family to see we aren't setting ourselves up as any kind of experts. We're actually in this with you, and we're just finding our way and our depth and seeing everything that the scriptures have to offer and that the Bible, for that matter, has to offer. And we're trying to be as honest as we can.
Yeah. Well, and this is one of those. It may be the apex of it. I don't know. But now, some of you guys, especially Mel and Al, now you need to get into this and find out something for us. And a lot of you guys that love getting into the Greek and the Hebrew, and because we've found out that these words, if you compared, let me say this, if you compared the New Testament definitions only to the New Testament definitions, you could have something here. Number one, if you didn't compare them at all and just used the word tree, oh my gosh, we can come up with all kinds of sermons for you. We can take the tree that bears fruit, the tree either bears good fruit or bad fruit, it can't produce both, and come up with an excellent sermon that the cross could not produce any bad fruit. It had to produce all good fruit. But see, the problem is that's not what the Greek word is for the word tree. It's not a fruit-bearing tree. Yet, as we have gone back to the Hebrew, we found out that we can't exclude a fruit-bearing tree from the word zoulon. So I think really, as I said, the only honest thing we can do is present both to you and see if something comes out of it. And you know, why not go with the first one that we were looking at as we proceeded into this? It was my hope that we'd be able to take this and do exactly what I just said and show you what Jesus said about a tree bearing fruit and either good or bad. So we either find a tree that by comparison to the parables, it's a good comparison. However, on the other hand, I just hate on the other hand. You know that?
Did you ever see Fiddler on the Roof?
Yes.
On the other hand?
Oh, yes, of course. So, on the other hand, we have another whole way to approach this. And only you scholars out there are going to be able to school both of us on this, I suppose. That the cross was not a dendron. It was not a live tree, and obviously it was not physically a live tree. Now, was it, Barris?
No, it was a stake in the ground.
It was, exactly. It was carved out of a tree. Mm-hmm. Therefore, the support for the word zoulon is definitely there. So let's take it, now we've taken it, is if you can apply the term dendron, this live tree, and goodness, Barris, we could go through verses all day long about that, couldn't we?
I'm just thinking that, well, yes, is the answer, but I'm just thinking this might be an amazing play on words, that a live tree and a dead tree together combined to create something new. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
The possibilities are endless. I mean, the thing that what a live tree can put into the hands of a skilled carpenter, and isn't it interesting that it was a carpenter who died on this Zulon that came out of a dendron? I mean, the possibilities now are growing.
You're scaring me.
I know, scared myself there for a minute. But anyway, if we took it as strictly the word Zulon and the strictest definition of that word, then it'd be certainly easy to apply that to the supernatural. I would put it on the same level as a virgin birth. There's not supposed to be life come out of a dead tree. And there's not supposed to be life come out of a woman who's not had intimate knowledge with another man. I would put it on the same level as a resurrection from the dead. That don't happen. Dead things don't come to life. Dead things don't produce life. But here in this case, something on a dead thing did produce life. So this... and this harkens back, of course, to the teaching that I've done on things that are against nature. And it really seems that the vast majority of things against nature are things that produce spiritual, such as the cross, such as the resurrection. And we have had those terms used to absolutely assail the gay community around the world for 2,000 years now, based on Paul's teachings, but here we are. So is it one, is it the other, or can we apply both? At this point, to be intellectually honest about it, we would have to apply both until there is something that would tell us definitively that this word is exclusive on either part as to its definition. Now, see, this one, these Greek words are not as clearly defined as the term aeon and cosmos and the other words. They have very clear and separate definitions. So, Barris, in looking at this, let's go back to the master here.
grasshopper.
I mean, you are the elder statesman here, so we do have to defer.
Well, you better start paying me like one.
Well, no. When you get to that age, you just start doing everything for free, right?
No, I live off my pension. Oh. I have to get the pension.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, why should I pay you? You've got a pension. So, here now with this take on this that I have alluded to, at least. The possibility of looking at this in more than one way. I get a lot out of it looking at it either way. Do you think that there is at this time anyway, the one thing I love about doing something like this is that a lot of times, you know, we may come back on next week and say, hey, guess what we found out? or one of you may text us and say, hey, guess what you knuckleheads missed? But until such time, where are we with this, Barris? Can we really leave this with the folks to say that either or of these approaches to this, considering the translations that have been applied to this, can be applicable or are we headed toward one or the other as far as the term tree, especially about the term, the word cross that we're talking about? Where are we with that in the definition of words and context also?
Well, the traditional Christian approach has been that the whole problem started in a garden with a tree, and the whole problem was solved in a garden, Gethsemane, with a tree, the cross. Now, I think that could be possibly seen as a little bit convenient.
Yes, I agree.
But only recently I came to the conclusion that all those types and shadows in the Old Testament weren't meant for the people then.
Exactly.
They were meant for us. Paul says, in these last days, Jesus came here as a representative of God, and now we start to see things, essentially is what he says in Hebrews, 1 or 2?
Yeah.
And then suddenly we see the disciples that followed Christ, it wasn't that they were stupid. They were pretty clever people. You know, they were carpenters and they were fishermen and they were, you know, they could eke out a living. They were just ignorant. There's a big difference between stupid and ignorant. Ignorant you can fix by education. Stupid, there's no cure for stupid.
And especially if you're ignorant by design by God.
Especially if God says, I'm going to make that one ignorant. I'm going to make sure they stay ignorant.
Blind their eyes and stop their ears so that they can't do anything but stay ignorant until I'm ready for them to be unignorant.
Which, in the disciples' case, never seemed to happen. They never seemed to...
Boy, it doesn't look like it, does it?
Disignorantize themselves. Now, Paul is the one who came up with, hey, let's look back and see what the scriptures say. Let's look back. Oh, hang on, the scripture says this. And yet this happened. Well, hold tight. How could the scripture say that? And this happens. God's going to be awfully angry, man. And yet now we see that that anger has been dissipated in the body of Christ. So we see these two dichotomous situations, which it's like never the twain shall meet. And Paul suddenly gets this insight into the types and shadows of the Old Testament. Now, the disciples did to a very limited degree.
Yes.
And there is no actual indication anywhere in the New Testament that they ever differed from their own Judaistic roots. Paul is the only one who seems to have done that. Now, the reason I'm saying this is because types and shadows are generally associated with the Old Testament. But what if everything that happened in the Gospels, what if those things that happened on the tree, what if those things that happened on the cross of Calvary were also types and shadows? What if the tree was both live and dead? You know, you look at a window and there's essentially two sides. Well, actually, there's six sides. But if you look at a pane of glass, you see two sides. If you look at a diamond, you see multiple sides. What if instead of just being a black and white, up and down, two-sided, in and out issue, this tree thing, what if it was a multifaceted issue? Mm-hmm. What if there were types and shadows within that, just within the story of Calvary, that made us say, oh, I never thought of it that way before?
So proceeding with the fractal nature of the gospel right down to something as finite as this definition.
Mm.
Would be to us.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're dealing with something that is alive here. We're not dealing with a dead letter. So the possibilities that you could look at this from more than one way and yet come up with the very... Now, I think this is getting very exciting. To be able to look at this as a live tree or a wood product of a tree, we still come up with the same conclusion. Either the fruit of a live tree or the defiance of a dead tree producing life. Something is not supposed to produce life, producing life, and that which does produce life, producing only one kind of life. So if it is a live tree, we know that a fig tree cannot produce an apple. we know that a tree of righteousness cannot produce a sinner. It's not possible. So in that aspect, we get to look at this and see the natural side of it. It's only natural that a fruit tree produces this. This is good. So we get to see this full picture from the natural and from the spiritual. What does the natural do? The natural would be, hey, it's only natural. Trees produce fruit. It's only natural. It's only natural. Trees that produce fruit produce only one kind of fruit. They don't produce multiple kinds of fruit. On the supernatural side of it, rather than the natural side of it, we've got a dead piece of tree producing life. So come at it from any way you want. The gospel is presented here, possibly in its most natural way, a fruit-bearing tree. You can't get any more natural than that I know of, Barris. And you can't get any more supernatural than a dead tree producing fruit. Am I doing okay so far?
You're doing great. Hey, come with me over to Psalm 1. I'll just have a little rant now. And at the end of it, tell me if you think this might be a way we can sew this together.
Go for it.
Mike, as you're talking, I am reading Psalm chapter 1. Blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. There's a downward process here. He walks, he stands, he sits. And there was only one man that we know of who did not walk in the counsel of the ungodly, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the seat of the scornful. Now, we might say that there were human beings who did that, but
right. Yeah.
Somehow, sometimes, somewhere, they all messed up.
I agree, yes.
You could not say this verse of anyone else, yeah, except Jesus the Christ. And we're talking about, you remember Jesus said that the law, the Psalms, and the prophets, they all speak of me.
Yes.
But his delight, mm-hmm. this man's delight, is in the law of the Lord.
Yeah.
Jesus says, I have not come to destroy the law. I've come to fulfill it. And in his law.
And how could you delight in God's law unless you were here to, unless you knew it was going to be fulfilled? There's nothing to delight about in the law. It produces death. How could you delight in death? Obviously, only he could do it. You're doing good so far. Go ahead.
But he.
Oh, wow.
But he shall be like a.
Yep.
Tree. He shall be like a zulon, is a Septuagint version. Planted by the rivers of water that brings forth his fruit in his season. Is he going to bring forth his fruit? Is Jesus going to bring forth his fruit? You better believe it. Is he going to do it when it suits him? And in do you remember Paul said in these last days, in other place he said, in the fullness of time. So he brings his fruit in his season, not our season, not anyone else's, but his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper. I am going to make a change in the way things are. I'm going to write my law in men's hearts. I'm going to wipe tears from all faces. And whatever he does shall prosper. Whatever Jesus set out to do, you need to ask yourself, did he get it done? I love what you say, Mike, when you say, John the Baptist said, behold the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world. Well, did he? Did he or didn't he? Verse 4, the ungodly are not so. Now, who are the ungodly? The ungodly are not the people who are not acting like God. The ungodly are the people that when they are trying to obey rules to make themselves okay with God, fail. And not one person under the law ever was godly. Not one.
So you would say everyone that came after Adam was ungodly.
Everyone.
This is so good.
The ungodly are not so, but are like the chaff which the wind drives away. Therefore, therefore the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment. When was the judgment? What was the judgment? What happened in the judgment? Who were judged?
Oh. Yeah.
Therefore, the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment.
Yeah.
Oh, I am so glad that we did not stand in the judgment, but we were hidden in the cleft of the rock. Nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous.
So there would be standing and sitting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Again, that word for righteous is tzaddik, which is justice or just. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. Ungodliness ended at the cross. It perished at the cross.
Oh, that's so good, yeah.
And the Lord knows the way of the righteous. The Lord knows the ways of Jesus.
Yep, and his ways are not our ways.
Golly, is this, I mean, does this stuff just get better and better? It's just, this is, oh Lord, for the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. I am
yes,
so
thank God.
Glad.
The way of the ungodly perished. I
wow.
beat you to your punchline.
I love it.
You got me too excited, Maris.
Go, man, go. I love it.
I had to finish without you.
And this is just Psalm number one. And
yeah,
there is a whole bunch more.
Now, see, what you've done for us today, Barris, is establish a proper comparison as to what the Psalms, this is Psalms 1. What if we maintain this comparison between the righteous and the godly as being Christ and everyone that came out of Adam? What would Psalms turn into if we did that? Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
Now I want to hearken back to the Septuagint definition of the term tree. Let's look at this just a minute. This piece of wood, he will be like a piece of wood that brings forth fruit.
Oh wow! A dead limb bringing forth. You know what this is reminiscent of? Michael, this is reminiscent of the rod of Aaron that budded.
Yes. Oh, my God. That's exactly right. Ah.
Nothing but a shadow of Jesus.
Oh, it is. So the dead wood produces fruit.
Mm.
Oh, man, I'm going to speak in tongues. But now listen what the rest of that says. Now, see, a natural tree cannot determine when it is going to produce fruit.
Yeah. Wow, yeah.
It can't produce fruit in its own season. It has to produce its fruit in season. A tree doesn't have its own will to produce its fruit like, hey, wow, it's a beautiful day. Let's make some apples.
I think it could be today.
yeah. And so here you have this full connotation of both words. Both definitions coming to fruition here in Psalms 1, and as you have so wonderfully done for us, is that you put this in its context, not just the context of the verse, but the context of who he's talking about. You established for us that Jesus said that Psalms was all about him. You took that to heart, and you followed that instruction, and you read this in that context, and look what we have found. Now, folks, let me tell you something. Just about 10 minutes ago, Barris and I both were completely lost.
I thought we weren't going to tell him that.
Barris admitted it to me, and I acted like I didn't know what he was talking about. But it's my job to do that, you know.
oh, boy.
But no, so here you go. See, these are the things that I get excited about. Now, I'm not just excited about what we're learning. I'm excited about teaching you what learning is and to look and to search for these things. Goodness gracious, a whole world has opened up here because we were willing to consider that maybe we've taught this wrong all of this time.
Mm.
maybe we've taken this term of the tree of the garden and the tree in the Garden of Eden to the tree of the Garden of Gethsemane, that we have falsely applied that. But you see, by considering the possibility of being wrong, this is what we were talking about the last time. Throw all the doors open, let go of your ropes, just lay it down. You don't have to walk away from your rope that you normally follow. Mm-hmm. Just lay it down and say, what if we're wrong about everything? Mm-hmm. Oh, dear God. And look and see. But this is where this can lead to. And in this case, it's led to something way more than I had any possibility of thinking about what this PowerCast was going to be. In fact, this PowerCast is about nothing I thought it was going to be about.
Hey, Jeff, there is a thought for a title, The PowerCast About Nothing.
And I bet he will not take that leap, because I think there's a lot of even better titles than that myself.
It's been almost a game that he and I play.
I know.
Yeah, and it's very... I was going to say it's very rewarding. No, it's not. It's quite frustrating, but it's a lot of fun.
So, goodness gracious. Well, we've got to read Psalms 1 again. All right, so when we talk about the righteous in here, we're talking about Christ. When we talk about the ungodly, we're talking about the whole planet. Everyone that was a descendant of Adam. When you read through that the ungodly would be destroyed, it's the first time I saw the human race being destroyed in these verses as a wonderful thing.
Mm.
Because I just didn't get the context of it correct.
Well, in Christianity, we always thought there were good people and there's bad people. We're the good people and they're the bad people, those great unwashed masses. It just goes to show
how self-righteous.
Yeah, it just goes to show when we have filters in place, we can make anything fit the damn filters.
Well, and again, to our encouragement to the folks today is lay those filters down. You can do it. And just look at this, look at each thing, at least for a moment. Now, how long did it take Barris and I just laying this down and relinquish all attachment that we had to the outcome?
Only about 64 years.
Well, I don't think we dared lay it down at all until just a few minutes ago. We held tight to it, actually, for 64 years.
Mm.
But here we are. And here you are, hopefully getting really a lot out of this. I want you to read through the Psalm 1 again. Let's do that one more time. And you can stop and talk about any part of it, and I'll interrupt if I want to talk about any part of it. But we may just need just to read through it again just to seal this up.
Did you want to say anything like you were going to make a thought there or something earlier, just before I interrupted you?
No.
Okay. Blessed.
All right. Now, the term blessed, according to Paul, means righteous.
There you go. Is the man that walks not in the advice or the counsel or the plan of the ungodly.
The ungodly is everybody who proceeds from Adam.
Morally wrong.
Yep.
Nor stands in the way of sinners.
That's everyone that proceeds from Adam.
Yes, exactly, because the Hebrew word means one who is accounted as guilty. Nor sits, and Romans 5:18 says that as by one man sin entered the world and condemnation on all, we were all guilty, nor sits in the seat of the scornful.
Hmm. What's the term scornful mean there?
Scornful means to scoff, to be scoffing and just to be scornful. Reminds me of... At the cross, we saw those two creations. We saw Jesus on the cross, and we saw people scoffing at him.
The old creation dying, yeah.
Yes. But this man's delight is in the law of the Lord. The word law is Torah.
Yeah.
The Torah of Jehovah, or Yahweh. And in his Torah, in his law, he meditates day and night.
That's where he saw himself.
Say?
That's where he saw himself.
You know, Jesus saw himself in so many, and he recounts in so many at so many times when he took the scroll up in the temple to read about it, about the day of the Lord. It was himself he was reading about.
Was it Josiah that went? Was he had and inherited the nation with a lot of idols, and he built more and was completely detached from the Jewishness of his life and the entire nation, actually. And the story goes that he was rummaging around in the basement, so to speak, and he found the book. And in the book, he found the prophecies about himself. And he read about himself in these prophecies and came up from the basement and totally changed everything.
It's Josiah. Yes.
Yes, Josiah. So he read about himself, he saw himself, and was able to transform not only his life, but the life of the entire Hebrew nation.
You know, this happened time and again, really. If you look at, remember the story about David, and they're bringing the ark back from the Philistines into Israel. And one of the people who were carrying the ark reached out his hand to steady it and was killed on the spot.
Right.
So David says, the king at the time said, and he was bringing the ark back to Jerusalem, which didn't happen for quite a few years because it stayed in the house of somebody. And what happened was David went, here is a fascinating thing. Israeli men knew the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, by the time they were 13, by the time they had their bar mitzvah, so to speak. And he had read the law, but what he had never realized was the precision of how to carry the ark. This is a man who spent time with God, who wrote the 23rd Psalm about the shepherd, when he was on the hills taking care of his daddy's sheep. Here is a man who knew the scriptures, and yet he had never figured out how to carry the ark.
Yeah.
He had not put it together until, and in that story it tells us, he went back and he read the Pentateuch again. He reread the law, and suddenly he now knows how to do it. He now knows what the ancients explained was the proper way of doing things, same as Josiah.
Good stuff.
It's different. It's different. But his delight, verse 2 of Psalms 1, is in the law of the Lord. That's like Josiah and David. And in his law he meditates day and night, and he shall be like a tree.
A zulon, dead piece of wood.
Like a zulon, planted.
I'm loving this.
Now, that word planted is not actually planted, according to Mr. Strong.
Oh, no.
It means transplanted.
Wow.
He shall be like a tree, transplanted. He was not comely that we should, Isaiah 53, that we should be attracted to him. He was not in his natural element. He was God transplanted into manhood. The rivers of water, often in the scriptures, rivers and water mean the nations.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So he was like a tree transplanted into the nations that brings forth his fruit in his season.
Transplanted from the heavenly into the earthly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Tell me that God didn't evolve. Oh, go on. Try and tell me.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow. His leaf also shall not wither.
Leaves withered.
Yeah, leaves wither. And leaves are what give shelter to weary travelers. Leaves shelter. His shelter will never wither.
Now, this is just, goodness, I'm so glad we went back and read again, because there's just so much you can skim out of something in one pass through. So here we have a transplanted out of one kingdom and one realm. This isn't just transplanted from one place to another. You could almost bring this total comparison to the Garden of Eden, to the Garden of Gethsemane. That you could say that was a transplant.
Yeah.
That this tree of life was transplanted from the Garden of Eden to the Garden of Gethsemane. There's just so much here. It's so alive. That's where we say the gospel has such a fractal nature to it. Folks, you get caught up in it. You start gazing at the Milky Way. You honestly do. But you see all of the natural, the nature-defying results of this. Number one, dead wood don't make a good tree. We find it making not only a good tree, but right now we find out it's producing leaves that will never, ever, ever wither. That's not a natural tree, folks.
And the shelter is permanent.
Yep.
And whatever he does shall prosper. Wow.
Boy, it did. And remember, this harkens me back to the verse where it says that God shall send forth his word, and it shall prosper in the thing whereinto he sent it. So God's word did something, and it prospered in everything that it was sent to do.
Man, this is gold. The ungodly are not like that.
Who are the ungodly?
The ungodly are the old creation.
Exactly. Bears, you've got me excited to go back and read all of the Book of Psalms again.
Oh, dang. Now we're in for a couple of hundred power cuts.
We'll do a psalm series.
I love it. The ungodly are not so, but are like chaff, which the wind drives away. In the old days, and a lot of people probably aren't aware of this, but in the old days, what would happen is you would take the you'd cut the top off the wheat, barley, whatever it is, oats, and you would around the seed of the wheat, and on a stalk of wheat, I don't know, you might have a couple of hundred seeds of wheat, and they're all sitting up there quite nice and proud. And what you do is you dry it, and then you run it through what's called a winnower. Or if you want, you just beat the thing crazy next to a piece of wood. And you do it when there's a breeze. The heavy wheat falls down into your basket, and the chaff, which is just the grassy surround, is just driven away. The wheat goes into the basket, and if there was no basket, it would go into the ground. Think of that verse of Jesus, that unless a seed of wheat goes into the ground.
Yeah.
Therefore, the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment. They'll have no place in the judgment.
That's just amazing. I've always read that verse and just it baffled me. And now it just makes perfect sense.
Isn't that lovely the way the gospel does that to us? Gosh, that's CPR, family. That is CPR.
Indeed, yeah.
Nor sinners, therefore the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. I am so glad that through the filter, when God constrained us all by love, as Michael has taught in Corinthians, as he constrained us or drove us all into one big old paddock, the fact is no sinners got through, no ungodly got through. We all got shunted into the body of Christ. Oh, my gosh. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous. This is good stuff, Michael. For the Lord. Hey, family, you probably think, I mean, if you're as impressed with us as we are with us, you probably think we planned this. We're just not that smart. I promise you. If you want to see the Holy Spirit in action, this is it. Therefore, the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous, for the Lord knows. Now, this word know is yada. This is the same word, and we've mentioned this a few times. This is the same word as Adam knew Eve and they bore a son. Adam knew Eve.
Yeah.
Intimacy is here. There is intimacy and kinship happening here.
Yes.
For the Lord kins and is intimately acquainted with the way of the righteous. There was only one righteous.
He's blood related to the righteous.
Mm.
The only way anybody could be righteous is to be blood related to God.
And Jesus never had blood before he came here.
Exactly.
For the Lord knows the way of the righteous. he is intimately acquainted with and is kinned to the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. This is written many hundreds of years before Calvary.
Exactly.
For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. Thank Christ that the ungodly and the ungodly's ways will perish. Thank Christ that we are all now bagged up in the righteous.
Woo. Well, and you know, the thing of it is Barris, that's true. Whether you're a Christian or a Muslim or a believer, unbeliever, doer, not doer, it doesn't make any difference. We've all been converted. We've all been through that massive conversion. And the odd thing is to watch religions around the world to try to resurrect the ways of the ungodly. If you take Christianity and its teachings of performance, belief, and all of those things, what you're watching is the resurrection of the ideas of the ungodly. Now, you can't resurrect the ungodly, they're dead. But how stupid is it for people who've been resurrected into righteousness, raised into righteousness, to take on the ideology of the ungodly? That's exactly what has happened. When they tell you, you've got to confess your sins, that is the ways of the ungodly. When they tell you, you have to be baptized, that's the ways of the ungodly. When they tell you, you have to obey, that's the ways of the ungodly. When they tell you, you have to believe, that's the ways of the ungodly. And these are godly people adapting to the ways of the ungodly. No wonder we're confused.
And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. Remember, if all the people who'd gone to sleep in church had been laid end to end, they'd have been a whole lot more comfortable. Are you wanting to get out from under frustration, confusion, fear, and into understanding, clarity, and confidence? You need to read Grant Miller's great little book called Think and Be Free. I spent some time with Grant recently, and I'm just telling you, when I think of the word genuine and transparent, I think of Grant Miller. His great little book is called Think and Be Free. You want freedom? I mean, really want freedom? Get this book for just $12.95 at Amazon.com. Think and Be Free by Grant Emerson Miller. We run a value for value model here, and it costs us time, cash, and energy to research, produce, and maintain this free product. This value for value model is the only way we feel we can present the gospel freely and unhindered. So, if you feel that you've received value from this podcast, I'm asking you to seriously consider putting your hand in your pocket and donating towards it. Why don't you call area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeff Robertson about how, I don't know how these radio blokes do this. I just got a mouthful of saliva and I just had to clear my, I have no idea how Glenn does this stuff. I tell you, I'm in awe of these people.
Indeed.
Why don't you call area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeff Robertson about how you can participate. Or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and just hit the donate link. And remember, the cash is never just the only way you can support the gospel. Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else just like you, starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. Perhaps you'd like to invite Mike to your area? It's easier than you might think. Call our office on the number we just mentioned with details when, where, and why, and we will make that happen. So now, it's good night from myself, Barris Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Evor, Alabama, a town so prim and proper it had to be named after the mother of all humanity.
And it's good night from Michael Williams. And I really don't want to say good night. I want to keep going.
Oh, I know. We're up to an hour 51 now. I know this is going to be the hardest damn editing I have ever had to do.
Oh, my. Well, thank you guys for coming along with us for this ride with us, and it has been a ride. Oh my. I cannot wait to hear the PowerCast. It has saved my soul today, Barris. Indeed, it has. And we want to thank all of you for participating in the pledge drive, and thank you so much for being a part of the Gospel Revolution. This is what we're doing. This is why we're doing it. This PowerCast sums it all up, folks. We still have treasures unspoken, unknown. We just went through Psalms 1 at the tail end of a discussion. The tail end. This was the tail end. not the discussion, just the tail end of the discussion. And yes, it is good night. I've got to stop. Good night from Michael Williams here in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, 33410.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended does not mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, join us again next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
I told you last week it'd be better, didn't I?
You told us. You told us. I just don't believe anything comes out of your mouth. I am a fool for not believing you. Okay, buddy.
Thanks, Barrett.
That was good. This is
goodness gracious.
This is going to be bloody difficult to edit down now.
Oh, I know it is. I wouldn't have your job for anything. Goodness.
Well, I love you, Michael, and thanks for today. This was just bloody soul-saving, mate.
Yeah, indeed it was. Have a good day.
Bye-bye, friend.
Bye.
I keep getting saved over and over again here, and it's been glorious. I'm excited to be a part of all this.
I've been shot down, talked about, so people scandalize my name. But here I am, talking about Jesus just the same. Nothing when you close your eyes.